Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and so I watch them so that you don't have to. And we are missing Henley this week.
We're missing her so much.
We miss her so goddamn much. Ugh. But she will be back. And in the meantime, we'll be doing a patron chosen episode this week.
Woo-hoo!
If you want to vote in patron episode chosen polls that we do every month, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW podcast.
We know how much everyone loves to vote.
Everyone loves voting. Honestly, our voter turnout is great over at the Patreon.
At the Patreon, we are setting the standard for voter turnout.
It's really impressive stuff. But okay, did anything scary happen to you this week, Emily?
Sammy, here's what I did this week. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I purchased the Hailey Bieber smoothie. So excited to tell you about it. I've now had a job for three weeks.
That's Hailey Bieber smoothie money, baby.
And it's Hailey Bieber smoothie money. And I truly was like, I've been talking about this a lot. I have a job now. I've literally never in my 32 years of life, which, you know, not all of that are you supposed to have a job for, but it's taken me until now to have a honest to goodness, real job with consistent money coming in. You work your job, you get paid. It's a job. It's real. It's not going to vanish in an instant.
Yep.
Sort of situation. You don't, you know, thank your lucky stars. You've been given the opportunity to work a job and earn a little bit of money. So basically, I'm rich now. And I treated myself this weekend to I was having, my tummy was, had been hurting for a couple days. And so I was like, well, a smoothie would be like, you know, nice and easy, which is
easy
maybe
to
not
digest.
In my head, I was like, smoothies.
I think it depends.
It just depends. So I was like, I could just drink something, you know, that sounds nice. And so I realized, I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do it, if I'm going to get a smoothie, I'm going to get the Hailey Bieber smoothie. So I did. I went to Erewhon on a Saturday afternoon, which is what an experience.
A crazy time to be at a crazy place.
Also, let me tell you this. I've only stepped into an Erewhon one time before in my life, and it was at a different point in my life. And I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can do it because I can see how easily I would become seduced. Like, as soon as I'm in there, I'm like, okay,
I want everything.
All the food looked so good because I'd pre-ordered, so I showed up to pick it up, but I still had to wait a little bit. So I was wandering Erewhon, you know, just waiting for my smoothie, and all the food looked amazing. The whole little, like, you know, prepared food section, case, everything. It just was like I could really find myself wanting to spend money at Erewhon, and it is actually absurd. The prices are not anywhere near reasonable, even for being overpriced. It's like there's overpriced and then there is, oh, I'm sorry, what? Which, so I'm rich obviously now, but I'm not that rich. I'm not Erewhon rich. So I'm really not rich at all, but anyway, got the Hailey Bieber smoothie. Joel also got a smoothie. Joel's smoothie, though, was only $13, which
there are some
smoothies.
pretty standard price.
I mean, that's
there.
Like anyone can get that smoothie. That's basically pennies. but I got the Hailey Bieber smoothie, which is $18. $18 for a 16-ounce smoothie. We're talking more than $1 per ounce of beverage and
liquid gold.
That's liquid gold. And it was very good. It was very good. But you know what? I'm not going to get it again. And not just because it's $18. I'm going to make a controversial statement and say, I prefer Punch Bowl. I prefer the smoothies to the Punch Bowl.
I did go to Punch Bowl this week and it was good.
I love Punch Bowl. Which is also, you know what it was? The smoothie was very good, but it was really very sweet. Like it was a little too sweet. Like, Haley, you shouldn't be having that much sugar. Because I presume she has this smoothie every day of her life.
Every single day.
A little too sweet, but delicious. I mean, absolutely delicious. But just, you know, can't do it all the time. Maybe we'll never do it again.
I've been trying to try all their smoothies. Not all of them, but I had to
working through that gift card.
On a previous episode, I've been gifted a gift card.
And that is the best way to use that gift card, I think, is just try all the smoothies. That's actually incredible.
And the Hailey Bieber one's not my favorite so far. I still like the first one I tried, which was a chocolate one with cold brew in it. And it was probably because of how I don't usually drink coffee. And it really sent me flying in a way that was really
going from like
delightful.
Not usually having any coffee to cold brew in particular is like your body was just hooey.
I was a woo. I was on top of the world. But I do actually think it tasted better too. It was less sweet. And I like a chocolate smoothie. I don't know if that's controversial.
I don't think that's controversial. I think a lot of people like
a
chocolate
smoothie.
But that's
what I make at home too. I do a frozen strawberries with my chocolate protein powder and some peanut butter.
Yeah.
And maybe some spinach or some kale.
Yep. I like a sort of nutty, datey smoothie.
Yeah, dates are good
in smoothies. I really like a banana, almond milk, nut butter, date situation. That's sort of like, put some leafy greens in there. Maybe some blueberries. Ooh.
Ooh, baby. I'm going to have a smoothie after this.
All
this
smoothie
talk.
But yeah, I was excited to tell you that I did it.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear it. You get to cross it off your LA bucket list.
That's true.
It feels like such an LA thing.
It's true. And they do us all a favor by putting it on the menu as just the strawberry glaze. So you don't have to say, I'll have the Hailey. But the little sign that says what's in it is like Hailey Bieber's strawberry glaze skin smoothie or something. And anyway, so I did it.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'm happy for you that it's not an immediate like, oh, now I have to drink this all the time. Because that's the scary thing. And that's the risk that
you
took.
That is the risk. Yeah. That's the risk that we both took.
Yes.
And I'm really happy to report that it did not change my life.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Absolutely love to hear.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. How about you, Sammy? Anything scary? Anything smoothie?
You know, one scary thing did happen, which is that I saw a mosquito and a flea in my house in the same day. And it was earlier this week. It's been a couple of days. And so they're both, I haven't seen them again.
Okay.
And I haven't been getting bitten except for, you know, that I have a bite on my toe right now, but that did come from when I was outside of my house yesterday.
Oh, the flea thing makes me nervous.
I know.
I've had fleas before with my cats and oh no.
I immediately put flea medication. I had some left over. So I put it on my boys who are indoor cats, but there are just like nasty street cats that hang out at the doors and those little fleas get in.
And it's summer.
It's bad. So I've been vacuuming a lot. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is just how I have been scared seeing all the comments and posts that think that the SAG-AFTRA Guild joining the strike is like rich, famous people wanting to get richer.
Okay, let's talk about this.
It's really driving me crazy. There are so many people that are in those Instagram comments being like, oh, poor A-list celebrities, like not getting enough money. It's driving me fucking crazy. I've had to really stop myself from like getting into fights with people because I don't like to comment. There's no point.
There's no point in doing that. But wow.
But I would like to straighten some things out.
Let's straighten some things out because it's true. Look, we, you know, the actors we think about, the actors we see are A-list celebrities. So that's who we're talking about. When we talk about movies, when we're talking about gossip, celebrity gossip, we love it. We love celebrities. Celebrities make up a very small percentage of working actors.
Yep.
86% of actors in SAG-AFTRA, 86%, 86% of union members do not make enough yearly to qualify for SAG or AFTRA healthcare. And you only have to make $26,000 a year to qualify for healthcare. 86% of working actors make less than $26,000 a year.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so crazy. The life of an actor,
it's a nightmare.
I get the like entitlement. I get how people in other jobs can like roll their eyes at those conversations at times, but like at least be open to like hearing the facts of the situation, which is that like people that are working actors have to go to so many fucking auditions. You don't get paid to go to auditions. There's so much of your job that is unpaid work.
Yes.
And you can't, a lot of times it's hard to maintain another like full-time job because you need to have schedule flexibility.
You get auditions. When I was acting and would get auditions, it would be best case scenario night before, usually, oftentimes day of. You have to have a job that allows you to leave day of, wait for an who knows how long, sit in a room, not get paid, audition for a thing that you probably won't get.
Yep.
Oh, and you do it multiple times. You'd be like, maybe you get a callback and then you do that again.
Yep.
And maybe you get a second callback and you do that again. And then maybe you don't get the job. And that happens over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. And it's just like people aren't being fairly compensated for their time and effort that they're putting into it. They're not getting healthcare. And like, regardless of your thoughts on the industry as a whole, like the conversation is between working people and like fucking corporate CEOs that are making mega million, like so much fucking money. So it's like there are two sides on that fight. And if you're against like the actors,
you're for the people making,
you're for the fucking David Zaslavs and Bob Igers.
$50 million a year.
And so even if this doesn't affect your industry personally, I think like any union victory is a victory for working class people across America. And like we have so many problems with the wealth gap, growing wealth gap, and the CEOs have made more and more money as unions have become less and less common, and huge corporations have clauses and anti-union things baked into their creation for a reason. And I just feel like if you're feeling like people are entitled and you have it harder and you have it worse at your job, like, look into fucking unionizing your job, I think.
Yeah. Also, that mentality really is, it hurts everyone. Like, I get it. People work really fucking hard and don't make enough money across many, many industries. But does the suffering of others improve your situation? Like, that, if, you know, it's like, it, that is not a helpful mentality for anyone. The answer is you also shouldn't be suffering. Like, that's, let's find a way to make that not the case for anyone. And like, I know that it can seem like being an actor is like a really cush job. You show up, you act, whatever. And if for some people, I think that that's true, but that is, it is brutal. It is really emotionally and mentally taxing. I used to do it and I do not do it anymore. because it is a terrible life. It's a really, really hard, really hard way to live. And I chose that I would prefer to go back to school and pay for that and then work a fucking 9-to-5 job, because being an actor is really fucking awful and you never make enough money. Like I said, I'm 32. I've never made consistent money in my life, and I've been working my whole life, and it's that's just me. But I'm just saying, it's just really fucking hard. And again, like, the problem is the structure and the wealth gap, and CEOs used to make 30 times what the lowest paid worker that they was in their corporation made. Now it's 400 times.
Right.
So that's the problem.
It's a very lucrative industry, and that money is going somewhere. And it's going all to people a are few asking people for only. Is that it's more fairly distributed, because the accumulation of wealth is going to mostly 10 people, and that's a problem in all industries and nationwide that we should all be concerned about, and we should be on the side of the non CEOs.
Yeah, we should all be on the side of the non CEOs. Because another thing that's coming up with all of this is the AI discussion, which is going to affect everyone's industry and everyone's jobs. Yep. That is an inevitability. They tried to put a clause in, the studio execs, the CEOs, the side of the people we should all be against, tried to put a clause in that would say a background actor, which is basically anytime you watch any movie or TV show, which we know you love to do. This is a movie podcast. Hello.
Yep.
All the people in the background, right? Call them background actors, call them extras. They make $100 a day, $100-something a day. But that's a job that people do day in, day out. People work every day of the week doing that. That's how they make their money.
Yep.
I've done it before when I first moved to LA. It fucking sucks. It's so boring. I hated it. But people do it. People love it.
It's a means to an end.
It is a way to make money, which people need, because nobody makes a living wage fucking in this country at all. But they tried to put a clause in that would say, if you worked as a background actor one day on any show, movie, whatever, they could use AI to clone your face in perpetuity, meaning you work one day and then you don't have a job ever again.
Yep.
That is what this fight is about. That is what we're up against, is people trying to make as much money as possible, squeeze it as from every single real living human being.
Yep.
So they can continue to make more than 400x what those people are making.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
And there was that Deadline article. It was Bob Iger, right? That said,
oh yeah, baby. CEO of Disney and ABC, in case anybody doesn't know.
Yeah, he said that the end game, or their strategy for this strike, is to hold out long enough that people start losing their homes and apartments, and then they'll really want to work again. And so they'll accept whatever shitty terms are put in front of them.
Says a man making $50 million a year.
Yeah. So
approximately.
That's fucking super villain shit. And so if you are not against that person, I just don't understand how. I think it's a misinformation. People don't quite understand the situation, and I get it. It's complicated.
Yes.
But the actors are not your enemies here.
No, and the actors that we're talking about is not fucking Mark Ruffalo and Mark Ruffalo. I just mean I know we see celebrities on the picket lines, but that's because that's interesting. We love celebrities, but it's not the fucking point.
No, and it's it them being there is still good though, because they're the ones with huge visibility
that people
and
care
like,
about, yes,
and much more leverage. Like if Mark right. Ruffalo walks off a set, that's a bigger deal than someone who's already been out of work and is more regularly out of work walking off their set.
The cast of Oppenheimer leaving their premiere is makes more of a statement than not the cast of Oppenheimer. Right. Like the cast of Oppenheimer, those people, think about it.
They're doing Florence in solidarity.
Pugh. Think about like, okay, how many movies we've seen Florence Pugh in?
Yeah.
She's one lady. That's just, think about how many people are at Florence Pugh tier. They're at Florence Pugh tier because they're in all the things. Mm-hmm. Then there's a bunch of other actors who are not in all the things. And when they mm-hmm. are, they make so much less money. And it's like, you're lucky if you get to work as an actor. You feel lucky because yep. most of the time you don't get any job. Most of your year, most of your life for most actors is hoping and going to auditions and paying for classes and paying for self-tapes. And it's like, it's so brutal.
Yeah.
And again, I know it's easy to roll your eyes like, okay, well, they're just an actor. Do you like movies and TV shows? Probably.
Right.
It takes people to make those things happen. And this is, and also, we're, you know, the writers are also striking. That's also really important. It's just, yeah, it's bad. CEOs are absolute villains. Also, we have a massive homelessness problem in LA and in this country. And the number one cause of homelessness in Los Angeles is loss of income. Yep. And these CEOs are straight up quoted saying, well, hopefully that well, hopefully we'll get more homeless people.
Right.
So that then they'll be desperate to take our shitty terms.
It's just absolutely ghoulish. And I just
it's ghoulish, which is a word we don't use enough.
I fuck. It's appropriate they're here. They're fucking ghouls. And you should be mad at them. they're the people that we should all be collectively fighting against, not just in this industry, but in all industries. I think we should have a general strike.
Yes. And like, the thing is, the more, yes, it like there is solidarity and more leveraging power, the more people join this fight. So like,
yeah,
SAG striking helps WGA striking, which helps other unions to strike, which helps other working class people. Like it is important.
Yeah.
It's like, it's truly on this one, there are really just two sides. And it's either you're like a fucking multimillionaire billionaire or you're not. Mm-hmm. Those mm-hmm. are the sides.
Yeah. I work in nonfiction, which is always not union. And this has just gathered some momentum in bringing conversations again of producers and editors and everyone involved in non-union unionizing. And I just feel inspired and I feel like our country needs massive change, and
yes,
I feel like we shall feel inspired and motivated to create a working class or like conditions that are actually sustainable for the working class and
you
for everybody.
You should be able to work a job and live your life. Like basically yes. point blank, you should be able to be a contributor to society, work a job and live and not suffer and not go without healthcare and not, it's like, it's really, it's, there should be basic universal income. There should be like a line that we don't let people get below because we have enough fucking money and resources to make that possible.
Yeah.
Nobody is good if people suffer. It's bad for all of us. It's just like what it's bad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No. Yeah. I've been feeling worked up about it as well. And yeah, I just hope that we can view each other as allies in a fight against fucking ghouls.
Zaslav and Bob Iger and these motherfuckers.
Yeah. But anywho, so I spent some time this week being pretty heated about all
being
that.
Heated, and it's hot outside.
And it is hot. So baby, I cooled off with some nice horror. A nice horror movie to
chilled
really,
you to the bone.
Absolutely chilled me. And like I said, this was chosen by our patrons. Our movie today is Silent Hill. Came Ooh. Out in 2006, directed by Christoph Gans, written by Roger Avery, who is the writer of Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. Really
Whoa.
Surprised me.
Is this on the same tier, would you say?
No, I would not.
Okay.
It wasn't poorly written, but it just like, it just, I'm just surprised that this is
okay.
what he went to
did
next.
After that. Yeah.
It is starring Radha Mitchell, Lori Holden, Deborah Kara Unger from a little movie you might know called The Game. She's the main woman in The Game, and I feel like I've never seen her in anything else, and she's in this. So I was very excited.
That's really exciting.
Jodelle Ferland and Sean Bean.
Sean Bean!
Sean Bean.
Uh-oh, what's Sean Bean gonna do? What's he gonna do in this one?
Sean Bean, famous for dying in everything that he's in. This movie's available to rent for $3.99. Emily, what do you know about this movie? I feel like we've maybe mentioned it here and there.
It's one, as soon as you said the title, I was like, I can recall this.
Yeah.
It like exists somewhere in my past that like this movie came out when I was in high school. So I'm sure I was like aware of it. But beyond that, I've got nothing. Drawing a blank.
I feel like we talked about it in a recent episode, and now I can't remember what it was, but the main thing to know about this movie is that it's based on a video game. And so it might have been more in the, you know, public conversation while The Last of Us was happening. There was a lot of times that I was reminded of The Last of Us. It's not zombies, but it feels very much like a video game, which I feel like The Last of Us also does. You're just kind of like moving through
things,
and things are happening to you, and then you move past them and continue
like
on your path. Yeah, basically. Like, yeah, but I had not seen it. This was my first viewing. It had been requested quite a few times, and I enjoyed it. I will tell you that it has a 32% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Not so high.
31% on Metacritic.
Also pretty low.
And IMDb sticking true to a 6.5.
Yes, you can count on that. You can count on that, which is to say you can't count on it to mean anything.
Yeah, exactly. What does it mean?
What does it mean? Is the IMDb scale like a scale from 6 to 7? Is that like their whole?
It's
like,
yeah, it's just
on a scale from 6 to 7. How much do you like this movie?
Yep. 6.1, 6.2, 6.5, right? 6.5. The budget was $50 million and it made $100.6 million.
Okay.
Not too shabby.
Now that's the Bean effect.
That's the Bean effect, baby. And some trivia for us. Oh, yeah. The video game was created by Kichiro Toyama, published by the video game company Konami. This game is super, super popular, or at least it was. I don't know. I'll have a disclaimer right now that I don't know shit about video games. I've never played this video game, so don't come at me if I get things wrong. I'm sure there's lots of little Easter eggs and shit that I did not catch because I am completely unfamiliar with the video game.
No idea.
And I would never play a spook. Oh, I played one spooky video game and I hated it so much. I played the Walking Dead video game.
Oh, my God.
And I was absolutely miserable.
Oh, my God. I still remember doing a sleepover in middle school at Melinda Shearer's house, and her brother and his friend were playing the Resident Evil video game. And the house was all dark and it was so scary. It was so scary.
Yeah.
And they were rich. So the house was big and it was like and the TV was big and I just really hated it.
Yeah, I don't like a scary video game.
Mm-mm.
Don't like anything. Well, interesting to say. I don't like being in the protagonist's shoes any more than I have to. You know, I like to be.
Yeah, take me far removed. Take me far out. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I also don't like a haunted house. I'll do it and I'll probably at the end be like, ooh, that was scary.
Maybe you don't like it while you're in it.
I'm like not having a good time while it's happening. Some casting what ifs. The main character in this movie is played by Radha Mitchell, who I recognized from Man on Fire. She's kind of a that girl.
Okay.
Because she's in so much stuff, but I couldn't really place it at first. And then I was like, I think Man on Fire. Anyways, some casting what ifs for her character. Meg Ryan auditioned.
Huh.
and Mia Jovovich, which I thought was funny because of Resident Evil. Like you said, she's in the Resident Evil movies, which the first one was in 2002. So she would have already
been doing that.
So it would feel, I feel like it's a good thing they didn't cast her.
Yeah. Because people would get confused. What am I watching Resident Evil?
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah. And this is some spooky trivia. So basically the general concept of Silent Hill is they're in this abandoned ghost town and it's a town where there's a fire burning underground. So it's very foggy and smoky and raining ash and like hard to see anything. And this is based on a real town called Centralia, Pennsylvania. And in May 1962, the city ordered to have the local landfill burned in an attempt to clean up the waste, but the fire spread through unsealed tunnels and openings that led to an abandoned coal mine, and this ignited a fire that burns to this day that they were never able to put out. And so they closed the town. Everyone had to leave, obviously.
Oh, my God!
And I just can't believe that that's possible.
Crazy, you can just close a town. Town's closed.
Really wild. I think some people did try to stay for a bit. I mean,
that would not be fun.
Obviously, eventually, I think you'd be like, oh, it's really not, this fire's not stopping, huh?
It's not good here, huh? Yeah, you can't, I'm not going to wait out this fire.
But wow, how crazy that that can even happen.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I liked this, some Sean Bean trivia, Bean trivia for us. He's the only one out of all the actors who didn't even try to play the game. He just saw the game packaging and was like, I get it.
Fucking love that. Hell yeah, Sean Bean.
He's like, no, I'm not going to be doing that.
I still regret that we didn't name Theo Sean Bean.
That's funny.
I would like to name a cat Sean Bean.
You're going to have to get a fifth cat.
Or, you know, a replacement fourth someday.
Yeah, true.
God, I love Sean Bean.
He's really great. I thought this was funny. To add to the accumulated filth caused by her character's journey through Silent Hill, Rhoda Mitchell did not wash her hair through the entire filming.
Ew. How long was the shoot?
I don't know, but
your scalp would get so angry.
Yeah, I feel like we got hair and makeup for a reason, you know?
And also, yeah, what a shame. How rude to the hair and makeup department, to be completely honest. Like, people had to get near her head.
Yeah.
And I do know that, like, your hair, your body adjusts, your head adjusts. But I don't know if that's enough time. And also, I don't know that that's worth it.
Oh,
yeah. Well, good for her. Yeah. I don't like it, though.
Good for her.
I don't like it.
And this film is included on Roger Ebert's most hated list.
Oh, yeah. Should we make our way through that list?
We probably should, yeah.
We've done a couple.
We've definitely done a couple. Human Centipede, Green Inferno, I think.
Yeah, that one was
on there. We agree. But he gave this film 1.5 stars, which feels like, okay, Roger, do you hate it? There's a lower rating than that, you know?
Using the old IMDb system on a scale from
a scale from 1.5 to 2.
Well, yeah, on a scale from 1.5 to 2, it gets a 1.5.
That's all the trivia I got. Okay. I mean, there's so much trivia because there's 3 movies and 3 video games. And so I just didn't want to get too deep into it. I could spend my whole life looking at trivia for this.
She's supposed to spend her whole life on that page?
I'm not going to do it.
Guys, be reasonable. She can't spend her whole life on the trivia page.
I got shit to do.
She's got shit to do. Go easy.
Go easy on me, guys. Freaking lay off for a second.
Lay off.
But okay, should we watch this trailer?
Oh yeah, baby.
Let's do it.
Honey, sometimes when you go to sleep, you go on a little walk. And sometimes you talk about a place.
I don't remember.
That's why we're gonna go there. So you can remember.
Somebody help!
Sharon's gone. I need your help.
I'm not okay. Please, hurry.
Fire started 30 years ago.
I don't know what's happening. Do you know what's going on here?
This place is completely cut off.
Only the dark one opens and closes the door to Sadendale.
Hey!
Where is she? I'm trying to find my wife.
She looks exactly like Sharon.
Why?
Rose, come on! Ah!
Rose, hurry! It's coming!
It seems like a lot's going on here.
There's a lot. It really is a lot.
I don't know what is. There's
nasty stuff.
There's fire. There's ghosts. There's weird creatures. There's a little child named Sharon.
I know that really threw me.
Really threw me for a loop.
In the beginning, as I was taking notes, I was like, well, the mom's obviously Sharon.
Sharon has to be the mom.
But nope, it's the daughter.
Huh. Is Sean Bean doing an American accent?
Yes. And
not so well.
It's not great.
Yeah, it didn't sound so great.
Sometimes it's fine, but it really,
you know,
really peeks through at times.
Also, that's the girl from Scream 5 and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Sharon?
No, Sharon. I think.
No, I don't think it is. You know who it is? It's little girl from Twilight Eclipse who.
Yes, that's who it is. Wait. And that's not the same girl.
I know who you're thinking of. The girl from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is also in I Think You Should Leave.
Wow.
And she's so funny and I Think You Should Leave. But no, yeah, she's from Twilight Eclipse.
Okay.
Does the mom feel like that lady to you?
She does. Yes, she does. Yeah.
She kind of almost looks like Shannon Sossaman to me. And
yes,
so,
I could see that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the like kind of square face shape and strong eyebrows. But you're right. You're exactly right. There's a lot going on in this movie.
That was a lot.
And because it's just her moving through a world and facing different challenges. And so it's just
right,
a constant
video game. Like, different levels, right? You like levels. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I feel like in video games, it is like that, where it's like, oh, on this level. I mean, again, I don't play them, but I feel like it's like, oh, well, in this level or in this
a new
chapter,
threat.
It's yeah, it's like now this is your villain.
Yep.
And then you go further
exactly.
down and oh, now it's the, you know, zombie the mummy people. And then it's like, oh, now it's the fire.
Yep. It also was reminding me of The Mist at times, I guess, because it's so foggy. And it has Laurie Holden, she's in both of them, and she's in The Walking Dead as well.
Oh, The Mist.
Yeah, it was kind of reminding me of that. This must have been around that time. I can't remember now what year The Mist was, but just kind of had that vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
At times. Yeah, Mist was 2007, so just the following year.
Oh, man, I haven't thought about how upset The Mist made me in a while. It got replaced, but it's up there.
It's a really tough one.
It's
really tough.
It's really, really up there. Oh, no.
So devastating.
Oh,
yeah,
no, this is not.
Yeah, this will be easy peasy compared to
okay,
The Mist.
This isn't
actually,
The Mist. This isn't The Mist.
There's some pretty upsetting stuff, but I don't think you'll feel as bad as The Mist. I don't think you'll feel as bad.
Okay.
Okay, you guys, I just learned a really wild fact that I need to share with you. I know I'm not usually a fact person, but did you know that Americans pay about 2 times as much for their wine as the rest of the world? Why? Because laws dating back to Prohibition ensure the right of wholesalers to make big margins. Okay, look. We got to be getting these wine deals that we deserve. And guess what? I have a solution for you because this podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet. So you get a box of the market's best quality wines, however often you'd like, for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores. Use our code TOOSCARY for the code and password at nakedwines.com to get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. I recently really loved a bottle that I got from Naked Wines of Chardonnay. And I'm not usually a big Chardonnay person, but I'm getting into it. You know, crisp, buttery Chardonnay is actually quite nice. And also the least acidic white wine, just FYI, if you're a little heartburn sufferer like me who refuses to give wine up, that might be a way to go. And I love just being able to try things that I wouldn't normally pick out for myself because I get these incredible variety boxes of wonderful bottles at, again, a fraction of the price. And how does Naked Wines do it? Well, Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard to your door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs, winemakers can pass those savings on hundreds of top quality award-winning wines to you without skimping on quality. It's such a good deal to get Naked Wines. I mean, price, yes, variety, knowing that you're getting wines directly from independent winemakers is just so, so wonderful. They've got a great quiz where you can give them the descriptors that you like in your wine so that each shipment is tailored to your tastes. So there really is no reason not to give it a try. Head to nakedwines.com/too scary and click enter voucher in the top right and put in too scary for both the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle. That's nakedwines.com/too scary and use the code and password too scary and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/too scary, code and password too scary for $100 off your first 6 bottles.
Hey! So should we do it?
I'm excited to find out. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
I guess this is probably not a very encouraging start, but I do have to give a trigger warning for child abuse and child sexual violence.
No!
So, yeah. Not great.
Okay.
But here we go.
Okay. Yeah, here we go.
We open with a mother and father. This is Rhoda Mitchell and Sean Bean. They are...
Sean Bean. Just think about the fact for a while that his last name is Bean.
And spelled like Sean, but with a B.
Which is how Bean is spelled.
He spelled... Sean, yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Seen Bean.
Yeah, they're not pronounced the same.
What if Bean were pronounced Bon?
That would be really silly.
It'd be a whole different universe if we... Black Bonds.
Black Bonds.
Some Black Bonds and rice. It's just weird to think about. Anyway, it's just to remember that like his last name is Bean. Like he's Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean. Wow. You're right. I had not thought of that.
Anyway.
Which is very funny for
someone to think about. Just something to think about.
I feel like I've thought a fair deal about Sean Bean, and I've never thought about him being Mr. Bean.
You don't separate him, you know? It's just Sean Bean.
Yep.
Please, call me Sean. Mr. Bean was my father. Okay, well, let's move on.
So I'll call him Sean Bean because I don't remember his character's name.
Please
do. The mother's name is Rose. And they are running out of their house in the middle of the night screaming for their daughter, Sharon. She sleepwalks and has left the house.
Scary.
It's a pretty scary opening scene. They run to, they live very nearby a very huge waterfall cliff.
Oh, God.
And so she runs to the edge of the waterfall. She's looking down below to see if she can see if her daughter has fallen down there. And she looks up and her daughter's actually on an even higher ledge right at the end of this cliff.
Oh, no.
And is asleep. And she's whispering to herself, home, home, home. And we see the maybe from the daughter's perspective, the waterfall turn into like a fiery mine shaft. And she's about to step into it when Rose gets up to her and knocks her back and is able to prevent her from falling. And as she's still kind of sleeping and waking up from her dream, she is saying, Silent Hill, Silent Hill. Next day, Rose and Sean Bean are discussing how she said it again. She said Silent Hill again. This is something that she always says during her sleepwalking spells.
That would not be good.
Rose decides that she's going to take Sharon to Silent Hill. They've basically looked it up. It's a real place not far from them. And so they're going to go there to see if it sparks her memory in some way and figure out what the hell's going on.
Adopted daughter,
yes.
Okay. Because it'd be very wild if it was your daughter that you gave birth to who'd never been to Silent Hill. Let's see if it sparks her memory. Like, well.
Yes, good point. Yeah, she is adopted. And Sean Bean seems against this idea, does not want to go to Silent Hill. So Rose takes her by herself. And
not a great relationship dynamic.
We see that this is, yeah, clearly taking a toll on their relationship. Things are tense between them. He is researching Silent Hill. He sees the information about there being a fire underground, it being an abandoned ghost town. He does not like the sound of this, doesn't want his wife and child going there, but they're on the road.
Did she not do any research on Silent Hill before going? Because I feel like if you saw that, you'd be like, oh, I guess actually no.
Yeah, no, I guess not. She just went straight there. And they, Rose and Sharon, stop at a gas station on the way and ask for further directions. And basically everyone's like, oh, why are you going there? The roads are all closed off. Nobody goes there anymore. And she's like, please just tell me where. And they reluctantly give her directions.
The whole town is on fire. You can't go there.
Lady, you can't go there.
Don't go there.
But she is determined, and she,
a mother's will,
is looking a little, I don't know, unhinged in this. Like, she's panicked and she's looking like she's desperate for a solution. And
I think a solution might be a really high up lock on your door.
Yes. That you
don't go to Silent Hill. Go to the hardware store. Put a lock up outside of your child's reach. Maybe find a sleep therapist.
That would be a better,
you know, I'm not a mom, but those seem like things I would do.
Maybe try those. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is a cop at this gas station, played by Lori Holden. And she notices Rose looks suspicious, kind of with the girl, and clocks it as maybe a potential abduction that's happening because the girl looks kind of scared. Mm. And the mom looks kind of crazed.
Yeah.
And
yeah, okay.
So she
trying to take her to a burning fire town.
Yeah. And so she follows them without them knowing. They continue down the road. And as Rose and Sharon are approaching Silent Hill, they go off on the closed off road and are speeding down the road when a little girl that looks surprisingly similar to Sharon steps in front of their car, and Rose, the mom's name is Rose, not Sharon.
Very confusing.
Swerves to avoid hitting her and gets in a bad accident, really bonks her head real good, knocks her out. And when she comes to, looks like it's snowing, but as she gets out of the car, she sees that it is ash. Sharon is gone.
Mm. And when she swerved to avoid hitting the child, do we see, like we did in the trailer, that it's a ghost?
I don't think so.
No, okay,
that was just a trailer. I think that was for the trailer, but I can't totally remember. But
I mean, it's fine. Who cares?
I didn't remember seeing that, no.
Okay.
So Sharon is gone. It's thick ash, or like thick foggy smoke maybe in the air. It's really like hard to see around her. She's calling out to Sharon, her child's named Sharon.
It's not a peer. It's my child, Sharon.
It's not a woman my age.
It's not a woman my age or older. It's a young person. little girl Sharon, I should say.
So nobody's confused, because I know it is confusing.
Well, I see a lot of children, but no adults. So that's maybe what she's talking about.
And we see, sure enough, a sign that says, "Welcome to Silent Hill." And she walks down the road in pursuit of finding her daughter, Sharon. And this is all like, yeah, the first 10 minutes, this all happens really quickly. This movie is 2 hours and 10 minutes long. So I was like, after this moment, how is there 2 more hours? but there is.
So we'll find a way.
They'll find a way. So she's exploring this town, which is nasty and abandoned and covered in ash and, you know, just everything's run down and scary looking. And as she is trying to find Sharon, she starts walking down this kind of tight alleyway. And then these sirens start going off in the distance, like blaring, almost air raid sounding sirens. And as that's happening, she's looking confused and it starts getting dark. We're thinking, what the fuck is happening? And it gets completely pitch black.
And it don't should be like that, like an immediate pitch black, like not the sun setting, just sort of like.
Correct. And it's outside and literally like can't see your hand in front of your face. Pitch black.
Oh, that's really
bad. And she uses her cell phone or something as a light, finds some sort of source of light, and it doesn't know what's happening and is going through these alleyways and finds what looks like maybe a basketball court or something. Something like a big high chain link fence that there is a man in a gas mask tied to with barbed wire with all of his like organs falling out of his stomach. But he's still alive and his eyes are bulging through the gas mask and he's kind of moaning at Rose as she finds him. She's totally fucking screaming, freaking out, what the fuck is going on?
Fucking screaming.
She is totally fucking screaming.
And I would be too.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. And as she's backing up, she almost bumps into a little monster looking child and is quickly swarmed by what look like to me little lava children made out of lava. They look very silly, very CGI. Although I did read that most of the people, I think they did use actual actors that were contortionists and dancers to try to move in these ways. But to make them, you know, look like lava, obviously there had to additionally be some CGI.
Yes.
And so they are chasing her. She's running from them. They look scary and are stretching like lava. Like as they move and moan, their skin is separating and kind of bubbling, boiling. Ew. And they're about to catch up to her. And she's screaming and trying to kick them off when the lights come back up and it becomes regular daytime again. And they all kind of disappear into little smoke that little pieces of ash again that fly up into the air. And the town is still nasty, but it's, you know, not as nasty as
when it's all dark and there's lava people.
Yeah, exactly. So she's running now, trying to get the fuck out of here. And she reaches the end of town and it is a straight drop off the edge of a cliff. So she is stuck. There's nowhere to go. And she runs into this vagrant looking woman that almost kind of looked like someone from Dark Crystal to me. This is the woman from the game, but she looks almost like a puppet. Her makeup. And I think it's because she has like supposed to have like thick ash on her face. And so it just has this very strange quality to it where she looks kind of not fully human, but, and she's also like, essentially it looks like a Disney villain witch with her little cape over her, and she's waddling around kind of speaking in riddles, being like, only he with the dark soul can open and close the nighttime. I literally don't know what she says at all, but she's not saying things.
Did you just make that up on the spot? Only he with the dark soul can open and close the nighttime?
Because that is really good.
It's something along those lines.
I really like that, Sammy.
She's not speaking normally. We're immediately aware that this is not just a normal person that's going to be helping us.
This is not a normal lady.
She's not going to be helping us solve the mystery of this town.
We're not going to be having a normal conversation.
But Rose tries. She shows her a photo, or she's saying, could you please, I need to find my daughter. Help me. And she's like, this woman says, my daughter's gone too. They took her. They took my daughter too. And Rose shows her a photo of Sharon and this woman whose name is Dahlia, we find out later, but I'll say it now so that we can
sure.
keep track. Dahlia kind of lunges at her, gets her eyes get all big, and she says, "That's my daughter. That's my, she's mine. She's mine." And Rose is freaked out, pulls away, pushes the lady off, and runs. And now she runs back to her car, and she's trying to go back the way that she came. And again, it's a cliff drop. Like, this road has changed, and now it's, there's no escaping.
Uh-oh.
But as she's back at her car, the cop arrives from earlier. And, oh, there is a scene where the cop is, tries to pull them over on their way to Silent Hill, and Rose fucking floors it. And I think the cop gets in like a motorcycle accident. She's a motorcycle cop.
Ah.
So the cop has caught up to her apparently and is now trying to arrest her. And sure. Rose is saying, "No, you don't understand. Like, my daughter's in here. I need to save her." And the cop is seeing this as like, "Oh, the little girl that you were with is now gone. The little girl that I was suspecting that you maybe came here to, you know, murder or do something bad to." And so this cop is not going to be helping Rose at this time, puts her in handcuffs. And as they decide they have to walk back because she's a motorcycle cop, and the other car is now wrecked from the car crash. And so they're about to start walking back to town, although they would have found out that I think it's a cliff's edge anyways. But they're attacked by a monstery looking guy that looks like he's cocooned in human skin. He's like kind of writhing around underneath skin. He almost looks like an Academy Award. made out of skin.
Okay, great, great.
Yeah. And the cop shoots him and is now aware that, you know, something's not right in this place.
Something's not right here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rose is maybe not lying, that something really bad is going on. But in that attack, it gives Rose the chance to run away. She just runs in the commotion with her hands handcuffed behind her back. She just runs for it.
Oh, no.
Back into the town. Meanwhile, we see Sean Bean on his way to Silent Hill. He is going to go find them. He stops at the same gas station. And at some point, another cop overhears his conversation or something. And this cop, whose name is Thomas Gucci. Oh my God, I love it. Thomas Gucci, Officer Gucci, says, or like overhears him and knows that the cop that we've met before is missing and was headed that way. And so he is curious and he's basically like, "I'll come with you." And he's from Silent Hill. He's like, "I used to live in Silent Hill. So I will accompany you there to try to find your wife and daughter and also our missing police officer." That
it's not looking good.
No. So they go to Silent Hill, and this looks like a completely different Silent Hill than the one that we see. It's sunny. I mean, it's still abandoned and gross, but it's
interesting.
Not foggy and raining ash. And so this might be more than a case of just being lost.
This might be an upside down sort of situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not looking good. So we go back to what we're presuming is maybe an alternate dimension version of Silent Hill. Raining ash again. We see Rose running. She runs into a nasty old school. There's men in gas masks there, looking like they're searching for something. And they turn and see Rose, and she's immediately scared of them. They look scary. They look like the Chernobyl kind of guys. I don't know. We just don't trust people in this place.
We don't trust them, no.
So she runs away from them, and she runs into this classroom and finds a desk with fresh child-size handprints on it, because everything's covered in ash. And so she sees these clear little handprints and assumes that Sharon was here. and she opens the desk that the handprints are on, and we see it was the desk of a girl named Alessa Gillespie, and carved in her desk are kind of taunting phrases from, I think, other kids that are calling, like, Alessa is a witch, calling her a witch.
Got it.
And as Rose is looking at this, she sees the figure of a little girl watching her and then running as she turns to notice her. And she follows her through the halls of the school into a bathroom. And the little girl is now crying in one of the bathroom stalls, moaning Myrtle vibes.
Mm.
And she's moving. She's slowly approaching and saying, it's okay. You know, I'm not going to hurt you. Don't worry. And as she opens the stall that she thinks this little girl is in, there is another man tied up with barbed wire in a really horrifying position. Basically, what do you call a hogtied? When you're like,
ankles to your feet
are tied together with barbed wire. And
well, I don't think it's specific to barbed wire when it's hogtied. No. This is barbed wire.
That would be.
What's it called when your hands and feet are tied together with barbed wire?
No, But he is long dead. It's.
Oh, okay.
I think this town was abandoned in the 70s. It says, and so he looks like he's been there for decades. He's pretty decayed, and
ugh.
There is a note in his mouth. And these kinds of things happen a lot where I think this probably makes more sense in the video game where she goes to grab the note, which like normally I don't think you would do.
Yeah, I don't know that you would want to do that.
She's like, oh, a clue, where that would not be really your thought.
No, I wouldn't. In a non-video game scenario, I would not think this man has anything to do with my daughter.
But I
would not think that this is a clue.
In the world of the video game, she's like, the little girl led me here, and this
is the path. Follow the little girl. Maybe you'll find a note.
Yep.
Take the note from the mouth, sort of that situation.
Exactly. But she grabs the note, and just as she is about to leave, the gas mask guys catch up with her and kind of corner her in this bathroom. There's no other exit of this bathroom. And so she just closes and locks the door and then presses up against it to hold them out, which I don't know. I feel like I've seen too many horror movies that I'm like, don't lean against the door. Anyone can. I mean, it's different, right? So there's different scenarios because sometimes you want to be able to press it closed for force so someone can't force it open. But I'm also like, someone can stab you right through that door.
Yeah. Big enough knife? Yeah.
Yeah. And baby, there's a big knife coming up. Not right here, though. This did turn out to be the right call, even though it made me very nervous. But we see on the other side of the door them trying to bash it in. But they have a literal canary in a coal mine situation, like a bird in a cage, and the bird starts freaking out, and they immediately drop what they're doing, grab the bird, they run. And not long after, the sirens start going off again.
Oh no.
We see Rose praying, please help me, please help me. She's holding her little she has a locket of Sharon's photo around her neck in a necklace, and she's holding that and praying. Then it starts getting dark again. And when it gets dark, it also transforms the world into, it seems like hell, like it's a literal underworld situation. All the paint kind of deteriorates and everything just becomes, I don't know, just like really
super upside down.
Yeah. Yeah. World within another world, from a third dimension. This is the worst one. The worst one. And after it's totally black and she's got a light on somehow again, I think her phone, that guy in the bathroom stall comes to life and starts coming towards her. And he, I don't know if he has one hand free. He's kind of like wriggling towards her. He's also like hanging his little tongue out going. And it looks really gross. And then as he does have one hand out at least, because he puts a hand on a wall, and where he touches, it's almost like Annihilation, where the wall turns like biological, like it looks like it's muscles and veins spreading out, flowering and spreading and coming towards her as if the walls are becoming like skin and blood. Ew. Like it's really gross. And the VFX aren't great. Like it doesn't look so nasty, but it is, it's a little nasty.
A little nasty.
Yeah. And as she's running to get away from him, there's a holes open up in the ground and all these nasty, huge cockroaches start pouring
out.
Just hundreds of them chasing her. And she's running down the hall and she sees this really big, muscular man with a pyramid head. He's got a big, it's like not even a mask. He doesn't have an eye. There's nowhere for him to look out of. I mean, I guess it's a mask, but it's like this huge pyramid head. His name is Pyramid Head in the games. And apparently a little trivia that I did learn is that he's not actually in the first game and it doesn't canonically make sense for him to be in this game for reasons that don't really make sense to me. But because he was such a big audience favorite in the games, they decided to put him in here and he is very scary.
Okay.
So she's running from him down these halls, school halls, and we see again back to Sean Bean and Officer Gucci, and we see that they're in the exact same place. They're in the halls and it's daytime and it's normal.
Got it.
So we see Sean Bean keeps having these moments of like, I feel like she's here, and it's as if he's sensing her presence, but they are not in the same plane of existence.
Damn.
I know. That's how are they going to get out of this one? And she's about to be, we go back to Rose and those bugs are about to fucking get her when someone grabs her and drags her and she's screaming, get off me, let me go. And this person pulls her into a room, shuts the doors, and we see that it is the other police officer. Her name is Sybil. And
Sybil
closes these doors. It's like a machinery room of some sort and locks the doors. One little cockroach gets through and it has almost like a human face. It's like looking at him all nasty, and Sybil stomps it, kills it. But Sybil doesn't have enough bullets to really make a big stand against this huge pyramid head man. She's down to her last round of bullets. So they're like sitting there quietly hoping that he doesn't find them. And then there's this really loud sound. We saw that he has a really big knife. I'm talking like 8 feet long. It's really, it's huge. It's really big. He's a giant essentially. And
okay,
we hear him dragging the knife along the metal ground. So it's like making this loud scraping noise.
Like when weapons get dragged, the kind of person who would drag their weapon around is really a bad. That's like at least pick it
just
up.
Just hold it. Just hold it above not touching the ground.
Yeah. Don't drag it. And I don't drag it on the wall. Don't drag it. And you know, just keep because that's the same kind of person.
Yeah.
Dragging it on the wall.
I agree. So, but he is dragging it and it's making a really loud sound. And Sybil goes, do you hear that? And it really made me laugh. And it really reminded me of that scene in Elf where Buddy burps so loud for like 2 minutes straight. It's like, did you hear that? Just the loudest fucking noise. Yes, Sybil, we heard it.
We hear it. That reminds, this is very different, but Joel and I went to dinner the other night and we absolutely devoured. We had a salad. We ate all of it. There was maybe a couple little, you know, pieces of Parmesan, you know, wide guys on the bowl. Like the bowl is empty and we had like pushed it away and our server comes over and goes, guys, we're done with this? I was like, yeah, there's nothing to not be done with. It's like a very polite server thing, but it really made me laugh when he left. I was like, what could we possibly have still wanted from that bowl?
That's really funny.
Anyway.
Yeah. And he comes and he starts stabbing his huge knife through this door. It's so big that even when they're pressed on the other side of the room, like squeezed up against the other side, it's like still almost at their faces. It's almost reaching them. And he's swinging it back and forth. And each time he stabs through this door, he's making a bigger hole. And eventually the little cockroaches are able to fit through.
Ew.
So they're now crawling at him. And then eventually he's able to stick his arm through and he's reaching to try to open it from the inside. Sybil seems like empties out what must be the last of her bullets into his arm, which I'm going, Sybil, we need to save those until we got a headshot. His arm's not going to do shit, but she shoots him in the arm a bunch of times and it does make him pull his arm out and stop for a second. And luckily in that moment, they start disintegrating. It starts becoming light again.
Oh, it's
and
daytime.
It just ends again. Yeah. Just don't know the rules of when
it's real unfortunate.
Yeah, so
that can just happen.
Yeah, at seemingly any time. But at least now Sybil is, you know, on board with teaming up with Rose. We trust each other now. And so they start heading to, Rose shows her the thing she pulled out of the guy's mouth, the clue, which says something about the hotel. And she's like, we need to find this hotel. That's where my daughter's going to be. So now they go to the hotel. And in the hotel, they see the old lady, the Dahlia character, and a younger girl throwing rocks at her and basically calling her a witch and being really rude to her. It's really rude. And they pull her off. This woman's name is Anna. And it's clear that Anna is also a resident of Silent Hill. And we're like, what are these people kind of coming out of nowhere? She looks all dirty and ashy also. And so I don't know how many people are here, but she is also, you know, not giving them straight answers about things. They're asking, have you seen my daughter? Have you seen my daughter? And Anna says, if your daughter has faith, she might survive. So we're getting some religious tones here that maybe this town was a quite religious community, which
didn't seem to help them at all.
No, it sure doesn't. But so they find one of Sharon's drawings in the mailbox for room 111 and decide they have to go there. Meanwhile, we see Sean Bean is trying to find records from the adoption place where he adopted Sharon to try to see if he can find out any more information because he knows something's going on.
Like, is she perhaps a middle-aged woman?
Perhaps, yeah, a little orphan vibes. And he finds a file of Alessa Gillespie somehow. I think maybe he's looking at files of Silent Hill, actually. But either way, he finds this file of Alessa Gillespie, who we know is had the desk in the school in Silent Hill. And Alessa Gillespie is the spitting image of Sharon. But again, I think she was born in 1974. So what the heck is going on? So what the freaking heck? We go back to room 111 now where Rose finds Alessa. And Alessa also looks like a little puppet from the Dark Crystal covered in ash with like little bangs jutting out at a crazy angle. And Rose is not, she knows that this isn't Sharon, but she's very, very shocked that it's basically her twin. You could be just like her. Like, what's going on? Are you okay? And Alessa turns to her, holds her arms out and says, look at me, I'm burning, and bursts into flames and then disappears. We see that Anna has followed them. And so Rose kind of went off and found herself, but then comes out of whatever room 111 back to Sybil and Anna and says, I think I just saw Dahlia's daughter, Alessa. And Anna says, we don't say that name. We don't use her name.
A little Voldemort situation.
And Rose kind of is like furrowing her brow and she says, I think something really bad happened here.
Well, we're in a hellscape and there's a child whose name we don't utter.
I think something really bad happened here.
I think you're onto something, Rose.
I'm finding clues in decayed men's mouths. There's a big pyramid monster. Seems pretty bad.
I think something really bad happened here. And just then a bunch of birds fly out of the house, which the townspeople, aka Anna, seems to know that that means the darkness is coming. And she says, we got to get to the church. It's the only safe place.
Okay.
When the darkness comes. So they're running. And as they're running, all these other townspeople are appearing out of the fog and also running towards the church. Like everyone is running for safety as the sirens start blaring.
Man, why wouldn't you just live at the church?
Great question. Why risk it?
Seems like this happens like pretty frequently.
Yeah.
What is this, like every 15 minutes?
It's just a lot.
Stay at the church.
Just stay there.
How could you possibly have time to get anything done in between?
Yeah. And what are you doing in these weird little fucking abandoned shops? There's nothing to do here.
Nobody's shopping.
No.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I've got a lot of questions, but Dahlia, they see Dahlia on the church steps. Basically, she warns them, don't go in there with them. They're all evil. And she seems more afraid of going into the church than staying out of the church. And Rose drops and is talking to her and is saying, I saw your daughter. I saw Alessa. She's been leading us here. And Anna is calling out like, come on, you have to come inside. You have to come inside. But it's too late. Darkness falls. It's pitch black. And as the light comes up, Rose and Sybil do make it inside of the church, but as they're beckoning to Anna to come, we see Pyramid Head is right behind her, picks her up like a little ant because he's much bigger than her. I guess not, like he's like three times the size of a regular person. Picks her up. She's dangling in the air. He rips all her clothes off and then grabs her chest and like yanks all of her skin off, essentially skins her in one fell swoop.
Oh no.
Real gnarly. So Anna's done. But they make it inside the church. They close the doors and it does seem that it is not the
darkness. Dahlia too?
Not Dahlia. But Dahlia seemed not scared. She didn't want to come into the church.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So Rose and Sybil turn and face everyone in the church now. They're all looking at them and all the townspeople immediately start screaming at them that they're witches. And I'm feeling confused by timelines here because normally, you know, a witch hunt time would have been the 1400s. This town burned in 1974. So this is 30 years ago. But it seems that they're kind of a religious cult type thing. And they are led by Christabella. Christabella. And this actress was great. I really liked Christabella. She was looking really evil. And that was actually one of the trivias I saw, was that she was so commanding as an actor that everyone always did what she said to do. And I was like, that's a really weird trivia, because I feel like that's kind of probably what they were supposed to do anyways, because they're acting.
Right. They do what the script says.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, Christabella is kind of the leader of this religious cult. And she tells Rose that if she wants her daughter back, she will have to face the demon, and that she hopes her faith is strong because no one's ever faced the demon and come back from it.
Okay.
We see another scene of Sean Bean getting caught with the files by the same policeman, Officer Gucci. And he recognizes, because he's from this town, and he sees the photo of Alessa, and he says what those fanatics did to her was terrible. This is like awful thing. And Sean Bean's trying to piece together what the fuck, like, who is she and where's my daughter? But we go back to the church, and Christabella is about to lead Rose and Sybil to basically the entrance of where the demon is. It's in the in the bowels of one of the buildings, in the bowels of the building. But before she does, she sees the locket with the photo of Sharon, and she's like, witch, witch, kill her, kill them both, like, they're witches.
Okay, so this is why Dolly didn't want to go to the church.
Yes. And Sybil is able to fight them off and give Rose the chance to take the pathway down to where they were telling her to go. It's basically an elevator that drops way, way, way down.
Kind of. So Christabel is kind of the town bitch.
Christabel is the town bitch. That's right. It's exactly right.
Okay.
And like Marcia Gay Harden, she's great. She really fucking kills it. It
takes a lot to be the town bitch.
It does.
You got to respect it.
And I do. Rose makes it to the bottom of, it looks like an abandoned mineshaft type of thing. And as she gets there, there's about 20 or so monstrous looking nurses. They look almost like statues. They have the little caps over their faces. You can't see faces. They look almost like, you know what they look like, is the bodies in Westworld before they become something. Like, they have basically mannequins in the basement type of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
So these look kind of like mannequins. Mm-hmm. And someone has given her a flashlight at this point, and they say they'll be attracted to the light, but you won't be able to see anything otherwise. And so she's shining the flashlight on them, and they all animate and seem to come to life and start running towards her. And she turns the light off and they stop. And so she realizes she has to make it past them in complete darkness. It's light enough so that we can kind of see what's happening. But
sure.
She's making her way through this group of evil nurses with knives. All of them have knives in their hands. And she's ducking through them, and they're sensing that someone's there and just slashing wildly in the darkness. Ooh. And so they're mostly killing each other and stabbing each other, but it's just her moving through.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Because they can't see either. And so she makes it through them and arrives in what looks like a hospital room, and the screen turns totally white, and we hear Sharon's voice, or rather Alessa's voice, saying, "You did it, and your reward is the truth." And we get a little flashback to her childhood back at the school. We see her being taunted by the other kids calling her a witch, and she says, "The other kids taunted me because I didn't have a dad like they did, and so I guess she was bullied and." Because she was born out of wedlock and her mom never said who the father was. And so they called her a witch.
She's like sort of January Jones in this world, her mom.
Is that a Mad Men? I didn't watch Mad Men. I don't know.
No, this January Jones. Nobody knows who the father of her child is.
Oh, the actress January Jones.
The actress January Jones.
Yes, exactly. And we all are dying to know who it is. We're on the edge of our seats. When is she going to tell us?
And until she does, I'm going to assume her child is a witch.
That's right. And Alessa runs from the kids that are bullying her into the bathroom and is crying in the bathroom like we saw earlier. And we see the janitor in the bathroom give her a very bad look. And in Alessa's VO, she says something like, and you know what happens to kids, or you know that kids are at risk or something, little girls that are find themselves all alone or something like that. And it doesn't show anything, but there is an implied sexual assault by this janitor.
And this kid is like 8.
I think she's probably like 12, but it's, yeah.
So eight.
Exactly. All kids are 8. And her mom, we see her mom finding her after this, and it seems like Alessa confides in Dahlia is her mom, and Dahlia is hugging her and holding her and goes to Christabella and I think tells them, you know, this horrible thing has happened to my daughter. And Christabella says she needs to be purified. Like, what's happened to her is a sin. And so we need to purify her. And Dahlia agrees to this because we think that it's like a very strictly religious community. And Dahlia looks reluctant, but is trying to, I don't know, do something good for her daughter's soul and wants to purify her. But baby, purifying is not going to be a nice thing.
No.
We're not talking about a little little cross around, like, or little, like, I don't know, it's nothing nice. And it's genuinely very horrifying. They put Alessa on a ladder, a long ladder that they elevate like 5 feet above a bed of coals, like burning coals. And so they're just slowly cooking her. She's like a pig on a spit type of thing. And she's screaming in pain and her skin, she's like burning alive.
Oh
but
my
slowly.
God.
It's so fucking awful. And Dahlia runs to go get Officer Gucci to try to stop this. But by the time she gets back, Alessa is burned to a fucking crisp. Her skin is all like black charred.
Oh, God.
And the coals fall. Something snaps and she knocks. Alessa falls and her falling knocks the coals over and lights the whole church on fire. And so that's what started the fire that is still burning to this day.
Shouldn't have cooked a kid.
Shouldn't have cooked a kid. That's where you went wrong.
Yeah.
And in this VO, Alessa explains that her rage split her soul apart. We see Officer Gucci and Dahlia taking Alessa's body. She's still alive and just like in excruciating pain. And they take her to the nurses who try to help her, but there's just not much that they can do. But she is still alive. And I think that's why all the nurses are like in the scary part too, because nurses would have been a very scary thing for this little girl who seems to be kind of creating this world. And she says that that's where I came in. I promised her that they would all fall into her darkest dream. And so basically we have original Alessa who in this pain and rage split into Alessa and dark Alessa, who is the little kind of ghosty girl that's been running around, who's perhaps the demon, trying to get revenge on all
the
people.
Created this bad place. Yeah.
Yes. Trying to get revenge on all the people that hurt Alessa. And then this is where I'm really confused and somebody probably knows, but I don't understand if Sharon is her daughter, if she was like raped and that, cause it's like,
oh God,
it's like, they describe it as Sharon is the only that's what's left of her goodness, the only thing left of her goodness. And we tried to save her and it shows them like putting the baby in the orphanage. But again, this was 1974. This math doesn't add up. I was just very confused by this.
Huh?
I think it could also just be like a part of her soul that came later. I don't know, but I
sure.
However the timeline works, basically there's now three versions: Alessa, dark Alessa, and Sharon, which is the goodness in Alessa.
Got it.
And dark Alessa says to Rose, all we want is revenge and then you can have your daughter back. And she's like, okay, fine. Yeah, I'm down to fucking.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever you bad things need to happen to these people, I'm on board. And so basically dark Alessa enters Rose's body, kind of absorbs into her. And she says, you know, I'm not allowed into the church. They won't let, I won't be able to get in there, but you can. And basically I can go in with you.
Mm.
And so Rose goes back to the church, or no, first we see back at the church, they have found Sharon and they have Sybil and Sharon each tied to their own ladder. So they're planning to burn.
Oh my God. They've learned nothing.
I know. They're doing the same shit again. Same old mistakes. And Christabella is yelling out that those who aid the demon must be cleansed by fire and the witch must be burned and all this, you know, same old shit. Mm-hmm. And they unfortunately do burn Sybil alive.
Oh, that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, and it's pretty gross. She's her skin like bubbles and blisters and she dies and it's sad.
Ooh.
And Rose comes in right after this and sees what they have just done. And she's screaming at them and calling Christabella a murderer. You guys are the true sinners. Like, can't you see that what you are doing is the true sin? And Christabella is using your fear to manipulate you. But you guys are actually the evil ones. And we see some kind of doubt across the faces of the other members of the church. But Christabella's control is just strong. So she's such a compelling actor that we can't fully disown her. And Christabella stabs Rose in the chest. Rose falls down to her knees and so much blood is like spraying out of this wound. It's almost looks like she's like vomiting blood projectile. Like it's just absolutely gushing. And
like Monty Python.
Yes.
It's like.
And as the blood hits the ground, it starts turning into the dark place. Again, the ground does the same effect that it has each time the siren has come on, where it starts kind of decaying.
Because she has the demon in her.
And Christabella says, you brought the darkness in with you. And they all start freaking out, but it's too late. And now this world is turning into the third dark dimension. And from the depths, the bowels of the building, comes Alessa's hospital bed. With her still burned body in it and all this barbed wire around her. She looks like Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man, where she's controlling the barbed wire and it's using to lift her up. And she shoots barbed wires out at all of the little cult people. Oops. And goes for Christabella first and is wrapping barbed wire around her wrists and shoots barbed wire through her vertically so that she gets ripped apart. Hot dog style.
Wowie.
And then, you know, makes pretty quick work out of everyone else in there. We get some nice violent deaths of just wrapping barbed wire around people, like popping them like balloons, slashing them. Dark Alessa is there dancing in their blood, little sprays, looking gleeful. Rose is able to untie Sharon and they are not being, you know, targeted by the barbed wire. They're being protected. And in this time, Dahlia has come inside too to see what all the fuss is about.
What's going on in here,
you guys? And sees Alessa and is pretty horrified. But it's still her daughter. And so she just looks like heartbroken. And she is also spared. And she doesn't understand why. And she says that to Rose at one point. She says, why did she spare me? Because basically Alessa kills everybody but them and then goes back down. And Rose says, mother is God in the eyes of a child. Interesting, interesting line. They say that a couple of times, so it seemed important. I wanted to shout it out.
Mother is God in the eyes of a child.
I think there's a message of them having faith in each other as humans rather than God. And there's a point at which Christabella had said to Rose, you know, if you have faith in God, and Rose says,
mother is God.
Rose says, I have faith in my daughter. And so they're just placing their faith in things other than God. And maybe that is just as strong and just as powerful.
Yes.
So I think that's the message that we're trying to get there.
Got it.
So after this, seems like everything's okay. I mean, nothing's okay, but but Alessa goes back down. It seems maybe her soul has found some peace. Sharon is allowed to leave with Rose. Dahlia stays and Rose and Alessa, excuse me, Rose and Sharon get back in the car and are able to start it again. It didn't like flip or anything. It just wasn't starting before. So we assumed it was dead, but maybe it
could have been,
maybe
magic.
It wasn't. And maybe now they've just, you know, just needed some faith. They start driving and we remember there's the cliff's edge at the end of the road and it's still there and they just drive right over it. But the car does not fall. It continues on and makes it, carried by their faith now, makes it okay to the other side of the road, and they're able to drive back into town, back out of Silent Hill and into back towards their home. And we see Sean Bean at home looking distraught, doesn't know where else to go now, like what else to do,
sure,
to find his wife and child. They're on the way home to him. I think Rose even calls on her cell phone, but Sean Bean picks up the phone and it's just staticky. He can't hear what she's saying. And they arrive home and open the door. And it's still very foggy and ashy. And we cut to see Sean Bean looking at the door opening and it's sunny where he is and normal. And that's the end of the movie.
Wow.
Still in different dimensions.
Interesting. And that's where we get Silent Hill 2 and 3.
Wee. But yeah, people apparently really hate the sequel movies, but there is another one coming that's maybe going to be a little bit better because it's directed again by this original director.
Huh. But it seems like this one wasn't very well reviewed either.
True, but I feel like the other ones were really badly reviewed. So I don't know. Yeah, we won't get our hopes too high, but it could be fun. The new one is coming next year in 2024, and it is called Return to Silent Hill. I don't know. We'll see.
Very interesting.
So Sean Bean didn't die.
He didn't die.
He made it. And it, you know what's and so funny?
How about that?
And spoiler alert for Possessor, if you haven't seen it, Sean Bean doesn't die in that one either. So the two horror movies we think people are most likely to die that Sean Bean is in that we have covered, he survives.
I mean, does he literally, again, okay, so spoiler alert for things that have very much been out for forever long time. The first being Lord of the Rings, the second being Game of Thrones. Are those the only two things he does die in?
No, there's more. I'm sure if we Googled.
Also, those are just those are real big ones. You know, those are some hefty deaths.
Yeah.
How many things does
Sean Bean has died Bean in 24 separate films and TV shows?
Okay, so yeah, a quarter of his on-screen. So only 25%, but that still feels like a lot.
It's a lot. And this is funny. This is saying from stabbing to shooting to death via cow. When did he die via cow? I don't want to look it up because it'll be a spoiler. And one day, I'll see it and it'll be delightful.
Gotta love Sean Bean, man.
Yeah, he's great. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed this movie. It does very much feel like a video game. And yeah, I feel like it could have been shorter. That would have been preferable for me. It just felt quite long. But I thought Rhoda Mitchell was really good in it. Loved Sean Bean. Loved whoever played Christabella. She was incredible. Patrons, thank you for choosing
it. Thank you for this.
It's not like a fun one, but it wasn't the worst one we've ever done. Do you feel not as bad as...
So between a 6 and a 7 is a 6.5.
Exactly. It doesn't make you feel as bad as The Mist, right?
No. No, a few things have.
Because Alessa got her revenge in the end. It's a happy ending.
Yeah.
Except for that they're stuck in an alternate dimension.
That part's tough.
And I mean, I guess one interpretation of it is that they are dead, that they died in the car accident in the beginning. And so did.
Oh, sure.
And that maybe, you know, everybody in the town died in the fire. And so this is just literal
hell.
And when Rose ran from Sybil, she got in a motorcycle accident also. So that was possible. She died then. So they might all be dead.
Yeah.
But
could
it's,
be. They might not be dead.
It's a little ambiguous.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really hope the afterlife's not like this.
No, I don't want
really
that.
Really suck. No, no.
It'd be so bad. Okay. Silent Hill. We did it.
We did it. And yeah. Just trying to figure out my thoughts about video game movies in general. I haven't seen any of the Resident Evil ones, but they definitely have a different feel to them that feels a little less, I don't know. I think it's a tricky thing to pull off well.
Yeah.
And I think it is better suited to a TV show for obvious reasons that it can be like, a video game is so long. Like Silent Hill is probably an incredibly long video game. And so even though 2 hours is a really long movie, it's all, it's just like I'm bored and also confused because I know there's so much.
There's just too much happening. To this. Yeah.
That said, between a 6 and a 7, it's a 6.5 for me.
Amazing.
And
well, there we go.
There's not really any voices in it.
Well, that's just fine.
She does have kind of a creepy little child voice as she's doing her VO, Alessa. She's not your child. She's her child.
Hey.
So I'll do a little creepy child voice and say, from all of us here, Too Scary Didn't Watch. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you really want to make our day, you can rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. You can also follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast. We are on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want even more content, you can become a patron at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. We will be back next week with a regular episode. We love you a lot. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.